This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX. Sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
With Chris Raji, I'm Tom Ackerman. Look at Henry. I mean, he jumps right in there right away. I'm not a fan of this deal, but I can see why it was done. There has to be more respect for the fact diehard fans love their ace, especially in the Lou. That painful loss doesn't mean we hate Bloom. Henry, listen.
This is Henry watching us on YouTube, and he was in the stream before the stream even started. I don't even know how he did it.
I respect the heck out of Henry because he is a dedicated viewer, but I will say Henry is irrationally, I don't know how to put this in the nicest way, Henry, because you do a great job, but like I think you need...
What's Henry do a great job of?
Responding.
Being attentive.
Yeah, being...
You know,
being,
we need that.
Being like, you know... So showing some conviction in what he believes. He's still sort of bewildered.
He should be convicted. You're right.
This is my take on Henry Wells 4. And welcome to the show, everybody. It's the Gas House Gang.
Gas House Gang.
We said, we go right into the comments immediately. But some fans, and they're very few, but for Henry, I think just, you know, bewildered that this is all happening. And I would say that if you are a fan of this show, I want you to understand that we're going to take you along on this ride. We've been telling you all along what was going to happen. The team was going to rebuild itself under Heim Bloom. And this does not mean that they don't like you, the fans. And if they aren't transparent with you and they don't communicate with you, that's my problem. And I think that they're starting to do that here with Bloom, with the team. They're telling you exactly what they're doing. So just understand, we're going to break down this Sonny Gray trade a little bit further with Chad Jennings. They just announced their coaching staff, which we'll go through in a moment, although no real surprises there. And we'll talk some football.
Well, let me say this about where Henry is coming from, because there are a lot of Cardinals fans, thousands, who feel similarly. And I think what the foundation of his thought process is he's upset that it got to this point in the first place, that the Cardinals are in this position now where they are flirting with sub 500 seasons, or they are now on the verge of having to rebuild, even if they don't want to use the word rebuild, that they are now in a position, according to the reporting of Derek Gould today, that now they're getting revenue sharing money, which is the first time they've gotten in what, a quarter of a century. And that is because they've had a lack of attendance. You know, they've seen their revenue go down because they haven't been very good, because the fan base isn't bought into them in the moment. And they will buy back in. It doesn't take long for Cardinals fans to come back. It's just a matter of giving them something to come back to. And they haven't done that for a few years now. They've had some prime players, but those prime players like Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt started to decline. And when your superstars start to decline and you're not a very good team around them, there just isn't much to be happy about. And so where Henry is coming from is the place of a fan who's just dissatisfied, and they have every right to be dissatisfied, because this base has been so supportive of a team, much like a major market has been supportive of their team, and we're doing it in a mid-sized market. And that should be commended. The fact that fans have come out and supported this team for decades the way that it does is a testament to how good of a fan base this is. And they just want to be rewarded. They want to be rewarded by good baseball and by a good direction. And they're not feeling the good direction yet. Some people are. Some people are looking at it from a distance and saying, hey, they got a guy who's probably going to be pretty good at this in Heim Bloom. He knows how to build an organization, or at least we think he does. Let's wait and see. But others aren't convinced yet, and that's okay. It's okay to not be convinced. It's up to the Cardinals to prove it to them.
Very well said. I think the one thing that Henry did say today that was a change from yesterday, because yesterday I saw his comment among many comments that we got yesterday on the show, was, why are people cheering this deal, or something like that? Nobody was cheering the deal. People are saying that they understand where they're going. Actually, Benjamin Hockman's column today in the Post-Dispatch cast a bit of a negative tone. Like, here we are. It's happened. This is, and he didn't really love what they got in return either, which I disagree. I think that they did a pretty good job of getting something for Sonny Gray.
Yeah, I don't know what you were going to get. I don't know how much better you could have done.
Here's the huge part of what happened yesterday is that the Cardinals spent $20 million on this. Do not overlook that. For a team that people think doesn't spend enough money, they actually spent $20 million not to make Sonny Gray go away. They spent $20 million to ensure that they received a good haul in return for Sonny. That was incentive to get the Red Sox to cough up a couple of good pitchers. One of them major league ready, which is what they want. And one of them, a hot prospect, which is what they wanted. And they got the prospect in Brandon Clark, and they got the major league ready pitcher in Richard Fitz. And now they have two pitchers that they can work with here. Is it a gamble? Sure, it always is with pitchers in terms of health. But they think that they've got something in Clark that they can build. And whatever he becomes, he could be a deadly reliever for you with a 6'4", 100-mile-an-hour fastball, a wicked-looking breaking pitch, watching video on him yesterday. Somebody that certainly could be a real problem to deal with. And then Fitz looks like a reliable guy, somebody who can throw multiple pitches and could be, when healthy, a pretty effective starter. He's not in this rotation yet. He's competing for a spot with Leahy and with Pallante and with whoever else they bring along. I still think they're going to come in. They are going to come in and bring in two more starters to anchor this rotation with the youngsters in Libby, who hasn't shown you can go more than five on a consistent basis, and McGreevy, who just got started. So, and by the way, they'll probably add more than that because they have to have depth in Memphis in case something happens, especially in this day and age, pitchers get hurt. They got very lucky last year that they didn't have pitchers hurt.
They were extremely lucky there. And so they're not going to get away with that this time, no matter how good their training staff is, their medical staff, which did an excellent job in 2025. You can't rely on that again because it's highly unusual to get through a season unscathed the way they did. So, yes, you have to plan for that. You have to have the depth. And if you don't, you're going to be in a little bit of trouble. But I think what our expectation of forget about how we got here. Forget about the Cardinals. Letting parts of their organization deteriorate in ways that other teams had not. When other teams were getting better in development, the Cardinals were lagging behind, and they waited too long to address it, which is part of the reason we're here. So forget about how we got here. The point is, now that we are here, now that we're in the position where it's sort of sell-off time, you have to be mindful of what's realistic. So if you had an issue with what they got in return for Sonny Gray, I don't know there's anybody on the roster at all, except maybe somebody like Mason Wynn, who you're not going to trade. But there aren't a whole lot of people on the roster that are going to net the kind of return you think they deserve to get, like those top prospects, like those number one in the organization kind of prospects. The Cardinals don't have a Juan Soto to trade. You know, they don't have a Fernando Tatis. They don't have one of those young players that will net you a haul in a prospect capital. It just isn't going to happen. So all they can do right now is they can try to acquire as many of those, well, let's see, players, you know, the guys that you could bring in, and maybe you've identified something in them that other teams have not identified. You believe you can unlock something in them. Those are the kind of guys you're going to get. And so as for the trade yesterday, I don't have any problem with the return. I don't know anything about Brandon Clark or Dickie Fitz. I have no idea what they're going to be other than what's been written about them. And it isn't a ton, you know. So that's it. We don't know what they're going to turn into, but those are the kind of guys you're probably going to get, and you hope that you hit on a couple of them.
We heard some eyewitness accounts from Rob Bradford of WEI yesterday. Chad Jennings, we will talk to him on this show. He writes for The Athletic, covers the Red Sox. More observations of Brandon Clark and Richard Fitz. And we'll, you know, I think you're right. I think we'll see more of this But I don't know that they have to trade everybody, but they are going to take calls. And by the way, I take calls for everybody.
Everyone. There's nobody off
the
table.
If someone said, hey, I'm interested in Mason Wynn, I'd be like, oh, really? What do you got?
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. I don't want to trade Mason Wynn, but I'm taking every call.
Alec Burleson, same
deal. They're getting calls on Burleson, yeah. I guarantee you. Donovan, Gorman. And for sure, now that Gray has been dealt, we all knew it was going to happen, but this opens up the Arenado door, Contreras. I mean, there's a lot that they're going to do here. This is going to be a roster with Heim Bloom's stamp on it, period. He is the boss now. By the way, the Cardinals are worth $2.55 billion. Like, this isn't some little franchise that doesn't have money. I mean, they can write a check for $20 million to make this thing move on Sonny Gray, and they can do it again. So that's one thing that they're doing in the background that won't go on payroll, but it is part of what they're doing. It's starting. This movement is starting, and if you have been wanting this for a while, it's kind of exciting. But Henry, we're not cheering. Okay, this is just reality. It's finally happening.
Here's what the emotion is. The emotion for me is okay. It's about time. Let's go. It's not excitement.
Let's not pretend anymore.
It's not excitement. It is a little bit of. You know, it's sad that we're here, but we're here. Now let's move forward. Let's figure it out. That's the feeling I have. It is not, though, celebrating over what's going on.
Of course not. Before we announce this coaching staff, let's rip through some of these comments. CL Dub, or is it DL? Sorry, I wasn't seeing that right. DLW 1904, a nice contributor on YouTube, says that Heim was brought in to fix the issues from the Farm Club to Busch Stadium. That's right. So that when you get to Busch Stadium, you're ready to go.
Big project.
You shouldn't
too.
Be learning the fundamentals of baseball and how to hit when you're here at the big league level. Although it does continue, the instruction continues. Coaching staff announcement in a moment. This is Tate Ryan outdoors saying good morning, Tom and Chris. I think Sonny Gray should have stayed with us and we could have traded someone else, but I do like the pickups that we got. Steve Burns said Sonny had some good games last year, some not so good. His 36-year-old will have a so-so 2026. All right, we'll see. I think he'll be pretty good for the Red Sox. Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving to Tom and Ron, you and yours. This is Kevin Kelly says that he thinks that fans are looked down upon by the media sometimes, and he's thankful that the Cardinals fans stayed away from Busch 3. You made DeWitt pay. Okay. I mean, they heard your message. And if that's the way you feel, hopefully you don't feel that way about us. I mean, we love the fans, but I can see how you might feel that way sometimes. Enrico Palazzo wants to know if the gamble's worth one season of Gray plus $20 million. I say yes. A happy Thanksgiving from Sarah. We appreciate that. And DL Dub says no one's safe. No, you're right. I mean, anything could happen here. All right, coaching staff, before we take a break and I tell you we get the perspective from Chad Jennings on this Red Sox trade as well. So here's the announcement from the Cardinals. This happened at the top of the hour. No real surprises here. So the following coaches will be returning to Ollie Marmol's staff. Daniel Descalso will be the bench coach, third season on the staff. Dusty Blake, his sixth season on the staff, returns as pitching coach. Brant Brown is back for a second year as hitting coach. Stubby Clapp, once again, is your first base coach. Pop Warner's back for a ninth season on the staff as third base coach. John Jay will be back. That's good. I think a lot of people would like to have John Jay on their staff. His official title is outfield, base running, and quality control coach. Brandon Allen's your assistant hitting coach. Julio Ronjel is your assistant pitching bullpen coach. Jamie Pogue back as a assistant coach, bullpen coach. And KT Kleiniger-Turan is the bullpen catcher. He also throws a nice BP. As we saw in the Home Run Derby once upon a time, I do believe. But he throws a nice BP. Casey Chenoweth.
That's what been missing, Tom. Somebody throw a good BP. That's been the problem this whole time.
Casey Chenoweth is your new assistant hitting coach. He was the hitting coach for AA Springfield last season. I'll remind you, they won the Texas League. Third season in the Cardinals organization. Experience in both the Arizona and San Francisco farm systems. He has certifications with Driveline, Marucci Bat Performance, On Base, and Repsoto. That is significant. They like what he does from a hitting perspective and his research. And then Kyle Driscoll is the new assistant pitching coach as they reassign a couple of guys. Packy Elkins is an offense strategist, and Dean Kiekhefer is now a pitching strategist. Driscoll pitched for Rutgers University, served as the Arizona Diamondbacks minor league pitching coordinator last season. pitching coach at the AAA level for the Mets as well as part of his resume. And he has experience with Cressy Sports Performance. So again, they're finding guys who have knowledge of where they want to go with their advancements.
Yeah, but we knew most of the coaching staff was coming back, and I'm fine with that. I thought they did a pretty good job given the roster last year.
Kelly Mars says no Willie. No, Willie McGee has he was not there last year on that staff as well. And no Albert Pujols, if you were waiting for him.
He's not going to be a coach. Maybe someday.
Yeah, who knows? We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll hear from Chad Jennings, a little more perspective, not only on Sonny Gray and what the Cardinals got in return, but Chaim Bloom did this once in Boston, and he was paying attention. Chad Jennings will have much more on that. And welcome back to the Gas House Gang. I'm Tom Ackerman, along with Chris Ranji. We are joined by Chad Jennings, who covers the Red Sox for The Athletic. We have had nonstop coverage, it feels like, of the Sonny Gray trade, and we get more perspective from Boston as we go back there. And Chad joins us. Chad, thank you very much for the time.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Not a problem at all.
Well, your first reaction to the trade yesterday, it came around a little bit over 24 hours ago as Sonny Gray heads to the Red Sox for a couple of pitchers, Richard Fitz, who's major league ready, and an intriguing prospect in Brandon Clark.
My reaction was that it made perfect sense for both sides. I mean, it's two teams in very different places. Right? The Cardinals are a little bit where the Red Sox were, whatever, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, they're kind of trying to move on and kind of build a different core here. And you know, I don't know, you don't want to say completely start over, but that's kind of what's happening, right? Meanwhile, the Red Sox have kind of gone through that and are more in this win-now spot, had declared that one of their primary objectives of the offseason was to get a strong number two starter behind Garrett Crochet. Sonny Gray does that, right? One-year deal for them. They're in a position to take on that short-term impact. Whereas I think the Cardinals, I mean, Sonny Gray was making too much money, right? I mean, just the contract was huge, and even paying it down, I still felt like getting those two arms, I don't know how much more you can expect to get, you know? I mean, Richard Fisk can jump in, you can give him a shot in the rotation right away. I mean, he made, 10 or 11 starts for the Red Sox last year. I think he throws hard. Maybe he just ends up as a bulk reliever, long man, but still, that's some short term impact. And then Clark is the high upside guy. It just made sense. Both sides, where they are, it felt like a good trade to me.
Yeah, the Cardinals are obviously acquiring depth when it comes to pitching, some immediate help for their rotation, which they'll still continue to try to fill. And then in the case of Clark, that's the interesting one. I just wanted to go a little deeper on Clark. We haven't had enough time to see him as a professional, but as you mentioned, he has an intriguing upside. What are some of the things that have been talked about up there about Clark?
Well, he was one. I remember him this spring, getting to spring training, and there's just this big lefty guy. I had no idea who he was. He was, a fifth-round pick last year? Mm-hmm. He wasn't really on the radar. And this dude, I mean, he's big, and he was one, just watching him throw, you know, I think a lot of times you're just seeing it in person, velocity, all these guys throw pretty hard, right? I mean, a guy throwing 89, it can look pretty hard. it looked different. It was like, man, who is this guy? We started asking around, and even in spring training, he was a guy the Red Sox were already talking about. It's like, yeah, this guy is showing up, and he's really got something. And it's not just the fastball. I mean, his slider is big and has a lot of real plus potential, a lot of swing and miss to it. Again, similar to Fitz in that maybe he ends up as a reliever. Maybe that's where he is in the long term. Maybe he is just a two pitch guy, a hard fastball and a big slider. Pretty good, right? I mean, that the upside of that, but if he can really harness his control a little bit and add, I think he started throwing like a cutter, this past year, you know, obviously trying to add to the repertoire so he's more than just a two-pitch guy. But he's definitely got significant starter upside where the arm is big enough that, you know, as a fallback plan floor of a strong-armed lefty reliever, there's some reliability there.
Chad, take us back, if you would, to Chaim Bloom doing in Boston or at least setting out to do similar to what's happening here in St. Yeah. Louis. Not a complete teardown, but certainly a restructuring of the minor league system. I mean, this is clearly a signal that he and the Cardinals mean business when it comes to rebuilding this team, not to mention the $20 million that they put towards Gray's contract to get a better haul. I mean, this is seems like just the beginning.
Yeah, I think so. It just feels like really trying to turn the page. When it came to Boston, the biggest thing that was different is the core here was very homegrown and still relatively young. Right. And like Mookie Betts, obviously, that's what gets the most attention. Right. He traded Mookie Betts in the last year of his contract. There was no the problem the Red Sox have run into was there was no real indication that Mookie was willing to sign a long term deal. Now, they trade him. COVID happens. He changes his mind and signed long term with the Dodgers. And, you know, things have gone great since then. It ends up being a huge win for the Dodgers. But that was the thinking here. Mookie is not going to sign long-term, and rather than risk him hitting free agency, when it felt like the farm system wasn't ready to really start contributing, which it has played out. The top of that farm system at the time really didn't have much to it. And so he was really having to start over by moving some guys who were more established. And in St. Louis, to me, one of the differences is, whether it's Sonny Gray or Contreras or Arenado, I mean, these guys, some of them, especially Arenado, have been there for a long time, but these are not homegrown guys who are just now in their 30s, right? These are the guys that the Cardinals have done this over and over again. They bring in good players who like St. Louis and end up having a lasting impact. But to me, that's more of what he's moving on from. And then trying to rebuild the farm system into, frankly, what it was for a long time. You know, I mean, the Cardinals always had this knack for always, you know, they'd go grab some fifth-round college guy who'd end up being a pretty good player. And so I think when it's – I don't know that turnaround's going to – it doesn't look to me like that should take that long. It's not like he's starting from absolute scratch. But that's clearly what he was brought in there to do, including, you know, this sort of, you know, a bit of an unusual transition, right, where you've known for a full year that he's going to take over. It's you know what the deal is. And if that's what they're trying to do, then to me, what you don't want to do then is kind of go halfway with something like that. If you're committed to this being what you're doing now, then let's go. And so Sonny Gray, 1 year left on his contract. This is not a year that you feel like you're necessarily going to put your best foot forward. Well, that 1 year is not that valuable to you. So you got to move that and try to get something long term. And now it's how many more of those pieces can he move? And within that, how often can he get a piece like Richard Pitts, who can also help in the short term, right? Richard Pitts is not going to be Sonny Gray, but can he be a piece that makes this that makes the turnaround a little bit quicker and kind of helps keep them competitive in the short term while they're focusing clearly on the long term, really?
Really good perspective from someone who has covered the Red Sox for a while, not to mention the Yankees, and from a national perspective, USA Today. And on top of it is a Sykeston High School grad, somebody who understands this market very well and what the Cardinals fans are kind of going through here. So we always appreciate it, Chad, when you contribute to things here on KMOX, and we look forward to staying in touch with you.
Well, hey, it's a lot of fun for me, so I appreciate the opportunity. I enjoy doing it.
Have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you real soon.
You too. Thank you.
And there's a turkey, and if you notice, you know, like the girl says, here's a leg here and a leg here and a leg here. There's four legs. And I think this one may have, you know, a couple down there too, but we have these turkey legs that we're going to give out after the game.
Oh, man, those are the times. Those were the days gathering with family and John Madden and Pat Summerall on my TV. Makes me feel good to hear that voice. That's Thanksgiving football with Chris Ronji. I'm Tom Ackerman on the Gas House Gang.
Dude, I'm ready for tomorrow. Got some good ones. I'm actually really ready for Friday. I'm looking past tomorrow on to Friday because it is by far in the NFL the biggest game of the year.
Well, let's talk about Thanksgiving first. Before we get to your game, Thanksgiving first, okay? Hold your horses there, Pally. Yeah,
man, I'm sorry.
I know, it's exciting. We've got a noon kickoff, Green Bay, Detroit. And that is always, since I was a little fella, the Thanksgiving Day game was Detroit out of the gate, followed by Dallas. I can still remember as a kid watching, you know, Danny White as quarterback for the Cowboys and Tony Dorsett running the ball and that offensive line for Tom Landry that used to stand up and then go back into their stance. I mean, those are the good days. Anyway, Green Bay, Detroit. A couple of pretenders in the NFC North now that you're the big boy in the division? What you got?
All year they've been pretending, but let me tell you what's about to happen here.
Okay.
For me. I am about to root for the Green Bay Packers.
Okay.
In a game. Do you understand?
Yes, I do.
Do you understand what I'm saying here? This is like end of the season, final series of the season. You got to root for the Cubs because it has playoff implications for your team, for the Cardinals. That's what this is like. I am rooting for the Green Bay Packers because I want to be done with the Detroit Lions. I want them out. I want them over. They got some offensive line problems. And if they win tomorrow, I think it makes our, and by our, I mean the Bears, it makes our case a little bit tougher. Because we've already lost to Detroit. Still have two games left against Green Bay. And I don't think Green Bay's all that good. So, in terms of my perspective, I'm about to root for my rival. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
It's insanity what's happening.
I know. That hurts your heart, but you got to do
go.
It. You got
You stupid. Oh, wow. You stupid cheeseheads. Go Pack, go. Let's go.
They've recovered well after losing to the Eagles in that ugly game on Monday night. On November 10th, they beat the Giants. They beat the Vikings. They looked better.
The Lions damn near lost to New York.
I know.
They almost lost to the Giants. It took them overtime to win.
I'm going to go Packers plus +3. I'm with you on that.
Let's go.
I'm going to go Packers plus +3 against Detroit. Now, your second game is Kansas City-Dallas, and I agree with everybody who's written about this, and this is what all media writers are writing about this week.
Chiefs have to win?
No, the fact that it is going to be the most watched regular season game in history, probably.
Oh.
The Dallas Cowboys are still the most popular team in America, and the Chiefs are knocking on that door with all of their excitement, and they play on KMOX, but also on CBS with Jim Nantz calling the action. Kansas City at Dallas for a kickoff on Thanksgiving Day. What a great day that's going to be. 3:30 is the kickoff for that. The Chiefs in this game going on the road against Dallas are a 3.5-point favorite. I hate that half. It's moved a little bit. It was 3 for a long time. Now they've added that hook. But I still like them. I still like the Chiefs minus 3.5 on the road. They will not lose that game to the flimsy Dallas Cowboys, who somehow came back and beat the Eagles. I'm sorry, but that's what they are. The Chiefs are a desperate team at 6-5. They impressed me with the way they came back and beat the Colts, and I think they'll handle business against the Cowboys.
They're going to, and it's just what I said at the beginning of the year. No matter how poorly they were playing or losing all these one-score games, which they are now 1-5 in those one-score games, it's when you have that guy as your quarterback, it doesn't matter. As long as you've given yourself at the end of the year an avenue, if you've got that guy behind center, he's going to win. I mean, it's just that simple. You can't distill it down anymore, but that's the reality of the situation. They got the best in the world. They'll be fine. They'll win this
amazing.
One tomorrow.
Yep. Patrick Mahomes is amazing. Always makes the right throw. Cincinnati
really
and Baltimore,
annoying.
I know, is the night game a 7:20 kick for the Ravens at home against the Bengals. Ravens have won 5 in a row. They have now jumped into a first-place tie with the Steelers atop the AFC North, and they're 7-point favorites at home against the Bengals. I got to think they handle their business. 7 seems like a good deal of points, but I think they can cover that. I'm going to go Baltimore minus -7 at home.
Yeah, I feel good about that one, too.
Okay.
I think that's the most in question game is the first one, Packers Lions. The other two, I think, are pretty obvious.
I do, too.
Yeah.
All right. So you have the Friday stage all to yourself, aside from an incredible college football schedule, which we'll get to in just a minute.
We'll get to your boys.
2:00 kickoff. The Bears and the Eagles in Philadelphia. The Eagles are a 7-point favorite at home against Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears, who have taken over the AFC North. Not only that, but folks, the Bears have won four straight. They beat the Bengals in that crazy game. Then they beat the Giants, barely 24-20. They found a way to win at Minnesota 19-17, and they beat the Steelers 31-28. Now, you might say, Tom, come on, those are all close games. They just, you know, figured it out. Hey, look, in the NFL, you do what you got to do to win the game.
That's
and
right.
They've done it.
Well, you can say they've been lucky, and that's perfectly fine if you want to take that sentiment. But it is, and maybe that luck will run out. Maybe those one-score wins, at some point, they have to learn to put teams away, or they can't have to come from behind to win a game, which they've been doing pretty routinely this year. And those are all true statements. But week after week, the narrative has been, well, they can't keep doing this. They're getting lucky. I don't know that you get lucky 5-6 weeks in a row. I don't know that in the NFL you continually get lucky every single week unless the officials are on your side like the Kansas City Chiefs. Otherwise, you're winning games. You're doing it without some of your own players. They had six guys on defense. Some of their best starters on defense weren't even available against the Steelers. So that's not luck. That's a team finding a way to win. I don't know if they're going to be 9-3. I do know this is their biggest game of the year so far, and it's not even close. That if you beat Philadelphia, especially if you beat them on the road, then maybe you shut that up a little bit. Those questions about what kind of team you are and if you're lucky or if you're for real. This is the kind of win, or at least have a good showing in this game, that maybe you'll make that talk stop a bit.
I love the Bears plus +7. I think that the Bears winning those close games, actually, they can tell themselves we can do anything. If Caleb Williams is not playing well, we can still win it. And when he does throw three touchdown passes, mm-hmm. we're a really good football team. They are experienced in close games. And the Dallas Cowboys just came back from 21 down and beat the Eagles. That's weak.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. And the Bears can cover this one at least.
Yeah.
I think they do cover.
Eagles showed me some weakness in that last game against the Cowboys. Did not like that at all if I'm an Eagles fan. Now, as for the college football schedule on Friday, it is a dandy. And I mean a dandy. Now, it starts off with a couple of really nice games. Utah at Kansas is a good game, but that Ole Miss at Mississippi State game will be an absolute dogfight. Those teams do not like each other. Ole Miss is ranked right now 7th in the college football playoff. They don't know where their coach is going to be. He won't let anyone know where he's going to coach next year. Lane Kiffin, the big mystery. There's all kinds of craziness surrounding that Ole Miss team, and Mississippi State is going to want to knock them out of the playoff race. We'll see. That should be fun, an 11 a.m. kick. Georgia Tech is another fun one at 2:30. Georgia Tech's played its way out of the playoff, but they can still spoil Georgia. And the night game at 6:30, Texas A&M at Texas. A&M can't get bounced from the playoff with a loss at Texas, but they could do some damage to where they play and what they are doing moving forward here if they lose that game. And they could well lose that game to Texas. Texas is pretty much out of it here with three losses. And then my Hoosiers taking on Purdue, Indiana at Purdue at 6:30. I got friends that are like, hey, man, well, what do we do with this Big Ten championship game? I mean, if you win it, if you beat Ohio State, you're number one, then you got to play Notre Dame or Alabama. And you know, I heard Rich Eisen is now on the air talking about why do they even have a Big Ten championship game, and why would you want to play in it, and would you want to win it? Would you not? Hello? They've got Purdue, man. I mean, does anybody outside of Indiana fans and Purdue fans understand how much hate there is in an Indiana-Purdue game at the end of the year? Indiana will try to,
like everybody else,
smoke
hates them?
That team.
Oh,
they beat them last year 66-0 in Bloomington, and they're going to try to put it on them again. Purdue's coached by Barry Odom, former Missouri coach. He will try to grind this thing out, keep it low scoring. He's got some defensive players that can hit, just like he used to back in the day. Well, so we'll see. It could get interesting, but Indiana should handle business.
They're going to hit their way to their first Big Ten win this year. Here's what I'm going to tell you about Purdue and your boys, your Hoosiers. Tom, if Indiana doesn't win by 30, it should count as a loss.
I gotcha.
They should, if they don't absolutely boat race these fools, your team should be out of the playoff. Out.
They're 28.5 point favorites in that one. I will not give a pick on that because never once in my life have I bet on my team.
I'll bet on your team right now. Just a gentleman's bet. Indiana wins. They better win by 30.
You're giving 28.5.
And if they don't win by 30, they have to be relegated to the Conference USA.
Forfeit the rest of the season as well.
Yes. Out of the playoff.
Saturday, 11 a.m., Ohio State, Michigan, the game. Watch out there. They haven't beaten Michigan in a long time. It's been four straight. We'll take a break when we come back. A little more baseball commentary. We see your comments coming in on the Gas House Gang, and we'll get into whatever sport we feel like talking about after this.
Now, back to the Gas House Gang, sponsored by Saliga Heating and Cooling on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Of course, we'll have Mizzou and Illinois fans saying, wait a minute, well, you didn't mention our games. Arkansas.
Hey, that's what happens. You keep losing, you don't get to be mentioned on the Gas House Gang. You got to do better to be on this show, pal.
Northwestern. Well, those two, I love Mizzou and Illinois, but the problem is they're irrelevant to the CFP discussion at this point. So I wish both programs the very best. I grew up a Mizzou fan. I continue to follow Illinois very closely. I had high hopes for both, but they're both 7-4, and it is what it is. So
Mizzou basketball undefeated, though.
Mizzou basketball is good, really. Aside from the Minnesota game, I haven't seen a lot yet. They're going to get tested, though. They're going to play some really good competition here pretty soon. December is going to get pretty good. This is GWC Junior 07. Another reason not to purchase or visit Busch Stadium again this year. No Yachty or Albert. No ticket sales and an empty stadium again.
Okay, we appreciate
what he said on YouTube.
We appreciate your comments on YouTube, but I love you to death. If you think Cardinals fans are buying tickets, and don't tell me that you would, because I think you're a liar if you say you would. Nobody's buying tickets to watch coaches in a dugout.
Yeah, I want to go see Yachty in the dugout.
They're not. I love those guys and what they did for the Cardinals organization. Hall of Famers. We're talking about Hall of Famers here. People are not buying tickets to watch managers or coaches.
They don't play there anymore.
That's right.
But they were fun when they played. The winter warm-up, however, you never know. I don't see them on the schedule. I don't know who's going to show up to winter warm-up yet. I don't have the rundown of autographed tickets. But I do believe that we have tickets to give away, Chris Ranji.
We sure do. We have a pair of tickets for winter warm-up, which is happening in January, just a couple of nights this time. We have two tickets. A pair. This is a pair. So you have to go with the person that you get these. We are looking for caller number 6 to the contest line at 314-955-1120, and you will get those tickets courtesy of the Cardinals, and you must have a valid email address.
GWC says, check last year's games. Check last year's games what? People didn't go to the game because Yachty was coaching in the dugout. There was no walk-up from that.
The couple of times that he did, there weren't added people in the stands.
They didn't go to the game because they didn't renew their season tickets because they were protesting. And you know what? Some of that could happen again. I say come out to the ballpark if you want to watch some ball. Shorter beer lines, shorter bathroom lines, and good seats.
There you go.
Beautiful day. Enjoy yourself at the ballpark. Henry wants to say, Chris, you kind of made his day here. You hit the nail on the head describing his feelings on fans. It's extremely tough but needed. I really like Henry.
Henry, look, we blasted him to start the show. We praise him at the end.
He's turned the corner a little bit.
Real journey today.
He understands the movement. He's just saying, I don't like it. It's foreign to me.
I get you.
I get it. I totally get it. Thanks for joining us. We hope you have the best Thanksgiving, and we will catch up with you soon. No Gas House Gang tomorrow. We'll be back Friday. A lot of great activity tomorrow. Chiefs, Cowboys, and then on 11:20, you'll hear the Billikens taking on Santa Clara. We're going to do that for the first time. Put our content on two different signals. It's going to be awesome. So long from Studio B.
Let's go.